And on today's Windy City Careercast, Kelly and I go to early vote. That's right. How did we vote? Can you guess? Also on the show today, he was a soldier, an openly gay soldier, serving an entire second term in Iraq. His name is Darren Manzella. He's on our show today because his life changed after he went on 60 Minutes and told everybody else that he was serving openly gay. And we have lots of news and entertainment. Plus, Kelly and I are off tonight to see Sandra Bernhardt in a Sandra Bernhardt Halloween. Ooh, scary.
Windy City Queercast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Kelly Simpkins.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queercast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming.
American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
Show number 257. I'm Amy Matheny.
I'm Kelly Simpkins.
And we have just voted early decision.
Woo!
Lesbians voting for the black man.
Hey.
It's exciting,
it's
right?
Extremely. I feel
first
very,
time ever.
I feel very emotional.
Do you feel emotional voting for an African American president for the first time in your life? And anyone's life.
In anyone's life. Well, yeah,
in
anyone's
face.
Life. I feel emotional because I feel like the entire country is swinging his way.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that he's not going to take this election. And yeah, I think it's, I mean, I don't know. I don't know the difference. If Hillary were on the ballot and I would be voting for a woman, if there'd be any difference in the emotional kind of temperature right now, maybe there would be a little bit. But I think it's just so compelling and inspiring. And he's doing so well in the polls. And I know that people are very, very, very conscientious about this whole Bradley effect and that governor from California. You know, what happened in the booth, that people thought a lot of racism would happen privately when people actually got in there. But I was thrilled to punch that button. I feel like a change is a-coming.
Change is a-coming.
It's very, I hope so.
It's very, very exciting. And it's, you know, I mean, you can really feel it here in Chicago. Of course, a lot of Chicagoans, for those of you who listen to our podcast and don't live in the Chicago area, you know, there's a lot of energy because Obama is going to be here on election night, and Grant Park will be opened up as a big
yeah, he's going to give
forum.
A speech. When he wins, he's going to give his speech there, and they're expecting a million people.
They are not expecting a million people. You keep saying this, but they're not expecting a million people. I read it in the Tribune. They're expecting,
what are they expecting?
They're expecting like between 70 and 80,000. It's a lot far less than a million, but God love you. We have a million listeners on the podcast and a million people that are going to be at Barack Obama's
Those
rally.
Are the figures that very reputable sources. I've
it's going to cost $1 million.
Well,
to try to, it's going to cost a few million dollars. And I think there's a lot of pressure from the city saying we can't accommodate that. Our city and our state right now is at such a deficit that the Obama campaign has said they will pay for the costs of what it will cost
he
for security.
Here, though, but it's going to be like, you know, the Bulls winning the championship times.
Yes, and a lot of people got shot when the Bulls won championships. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of people. I know you and I have discussed, like, whether we're going to go down there. We are, of course, going to see Celine Dion on election night. which means we're going to have to TiVo all the coverage.
We have our priorities. You have your priorities. I won't put myself in that boat with you.
Yes. Well, but the thing of it is that, you know, I'm sure they'll be announcing what's happening. He's easily going to take Illinois, but by the time we get out of the concert, they will just be stopping polls in the West, and I think there's going to be a lot of states in contention in the West.
Yeah.
That are going to be deciding this election, and there are going to be some states that they think are going to be so close.
Yeah, who knows? I think a lot of people, the people that I've talked to, are going to get down there like at 4 o'clock. He probably won't give a speech until 10:30 or 11. So what do you do?
He's probably not going to give a speech even by that early.
Well, he could. He could come out. Who knows?
I mean, it will depend on if it is a total landslide or if it is close. If it's a landslide.
I feel like it's going to be a landslide.
Do you?
I hope that it's going to be a landslide.
I hope that it is, too, because that will send such a message.
There are so many
to the world,
even conservative
more
Republicans
than the
that are voting for Obama, that have come out in support of Obama, which is, you still haven't watched Colin Powell's...
No, but that doesn't surprise me.
Meet the Press. No, but just the eloquence with which he talked about him. And, you know, one of the most amazing things that he said out loud, which I think somebody needed to say, is, you know, this whole thing that McCain has been throwing up, like, you know, he's a Muslim. He's a Muslim.
And he's a terrorist.
He's a terrorist. But saying that he's a Muslim as if that is a horrible thing. And, you know, Colin Powell said, okay, so what? What if he were? Does that mean that he can't still be an amazing president? Does that mean that he is not an intelligent... I mean, you know, what are we saying when we say things like that? What is our fear level and, you know, what we've been kind of conditioned in the last couple of years to really think about Muslim people? And he, you know, he talked about this young Muslim man whose mother had some, I can't remember what, but he died in the Iraq War, and he was American, and he was Muslim.
Yeah.
And then he served our country. And, you know, really, I just think it's really important out loud for somebody to say, and I think specifically him, it was just very emotional hearing him say that.
Yeah.
Like, so what?
Yeah.
To what end?
Well, and that goes right to the point of our guest today who's on the show. From the Service Members Legal Defense Network, we have Darren Manzella on the show, who was, you know, discharged for being openly gay in the military. He actually served his second term at Iraq openly gay, out, had been held up on charges, and then... you know, was found that there was no evidence that he was gay, even though he provided them with tons of evidence and told them flat out he was gay. But then he went on 60 Minutes and his life changed. And now he's working to fight this legislation, which is something that definitely Obama and Biden have supported, is repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And we're getting closer and closer. And hopefully Colin Powell will change his stance on that as well, because he did not lend his support around the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell many years ago. Don't know where he stands on it now, but really, really fascinating interview with a hot gay soldier. So Darren Manzella on the show today, plus we have news and entertainment, and Kelly and I'll be back because we're heading out to see Sandra Bernhardt at a very Sandra Halloween tonight at Steppenwolf, so we'll let you know how that goes after later on in the show. And we do need to note the tragedy in Jennifer Hudson's life this past week after we had put out our podcast with Jennifer on Friday. Of course, everything went down with her family. Our thoughts and prayers are with her, but we hope that you will enjoy the interview if you have not listened to it. We'll be back.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Basketball Shoe Designer.
Mr. Basketball Shoe Designer.
Every year you make staggering advances in technology, like air, more air, slightly less air, and a separate air chamber for maximum air.
She's gonna blow!
Good ball handling skills, sound fundamentals, a killer outside shot. All completely useless unless we're wearing your sneakers.
I got a 2-inch vertical.
They're designed to last for a decade, which is just about the time we'll have them paid off.
I'm living in my van.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, old Sultan of the sneaker. We may never make a layup, but your shoes will always be a slam dunk.
Mr. Basketball Shoe Designer.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. A member of an Oregon Native American tribe is challenging the tribe's council's approval of same-sex marriage. The Coquille Tribal Council recently approved to allow same-sex marriage and recognize same-sex marriages and civil unions performed elsewhere. They are the first Native American tribe to do so. However, one tribe member, Brady Metcalf, disapproves because he feels all tribal adults should have voted on the issue, not just the tribal council.
Anti-gay Bush appointee Scott Block announced that he is resigning from his position as U.S. Special Counsel at the end of January, a year before he legally has to leave. Block is currently under investigation for refusing to protect GLBT workers. The Office of Personnel Management also investigated him for how he allegedly handled whistleblower cases. Block allegedly closed such cases without investigating them and intimidated whistleblowers.
An October poll shows that the gap between those who favor Proposition 8 and those who oppose it has narrowed. The Public Policy Institute has been tracking California voters every month. Proposition 8, if passed, would ban same-sex marriage in California. Although the recent survey found that more voters oppose the ban, when the margin of error is taken into consideration, voters are divided on the issue.
Judy Shepard will be honored with a 2008 Walter Cronkite Faith and Freedom Award. This year's other honorees are Azra Nomani and Rabbi Erwin Kula. Shepard is an international spokesperson for hate crime legislation and is the executive director of the Matthew Shepard Foundation. October marks the 10-year anniversary of the murder of her son, Matthew.
William Shatner, best known for his role in Star Trek's Captain Kirk, recently posted a YouTube rant attacking former co-star George Takei. Shatner claimed that he felt snubbed by Takei because he wasn't invited to his wedding. In September, Takei, who played Mr. Sulu, married his longtime partner in California. However, according to the Out actor, Shatner was invited to attend several times, but declined.
Lesbian daytime talk show host Ellen DeGeneres called Republican VP candidate Governor Sarah Palin out during a recent episode of her show for supporting a federal ban of same-sex marriage. DeGeneres said, "Maybe it's because I'm gay that I think we should all be equal, but I feel that we're all equal. People are going to be who they're going to be, and we need to learn to love them for who they are and let them love who they want to love."
Out actor Nathan Lane is rumored to play the role of Brad Garrett's gay brother in an upcoming episode of Till Death. The episode will air on November 18th during sweeps. Reportedly, Garrett's character, Eddie, gets paid a visit from his gay brother who recently broke up with his longtime partner. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Direct from Broadway, it's Grease, starring American Idol winner Taylor Hicks. Yes, it's Time Magazine's number one musical of the year, featuring all those songs that you love. They're all here. Grease Lightning, Summer Nights, Sandy, We Go Together, Beauty School Dropout, Hopelessly Devoted to You, and of course, You're the One That I Want.
You're the one that I want.
So come on and check out Taylor Hicks in the show The Associated Press calls the original high school musical, Grease. Get the tickets you want today.
Begins January 6th at the Auditorium Theater. Visit BroadwayInChicago.com for tickets.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of October 27th, 2008, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Haram Aran is a controversial and mind-blowing play by J. Paul Darantani based on the true story of two Arabic boys accused of homosexual sins. Haram Aran is playing through December 7th at the Athenaeum Theater for only $20, and 25% of the profits are donated to charities preventing human rights abuses in Iran. For tickets, visit Ticketmaster.com. Warning, this show contains nudity, violence, and strong political content.
Don't miss the Gift Theater's production of David Rabe's Streamers. In 1965, boot camp is over. Four young men wait for deployment to Vietnam. As anticipation, race, and sexuality climax at dizzying heights, a free fall begins that perhaps no man can survive. Visit thegifttheater.org.
Writers Theater presents Picnic by William Inge, directed by David Cromer. The Chicago Tribune calls it an intensely emotional revival, and the Sun-Times claims every performance is exquisitely shaped. For more information about Picnic at Writers Theatre, log on to writerstheatre.org.
American Theatre Company presents Celebrity Row, written by Itamar Moses and directed by David Cromer. Based on the fact that in the late 90s, four of America's most notorious criminals were housed at the same cell block, Celebrity Row explores issues of homeland security and individual freedoms in one of the most dazzling cliffhangers of modern drama. Playing through November 16th. Tickets at atcweb.org.
Remy Bumpo Theater presents The Voisey Inheritance by Harley Granville Barker, adapted by David Mamet. When do-gooder Edward Voisey learns of shady dealings within the family business, he is determined to set things right, but the rest of the family has other plans. The Voisey Inheritance plays through November 2nd at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse Theater. Visit remybumpo.org.
Beautiful circus ring mistress Miranda Towers had it all until her world came tumbling down and things went haywire. Don't miss Haywire, presented by Hell in a Handbag, for murder, melodrama, and an axe-wielding Joan Crawford under the big top. At the Bailiwick, 1229 West Belmont. For tickets, go to handbagproductions.org and mention the code WCT to get $5 off each ticket.
Don't miss the hilarious comedy Don't Dress for Dinner, starring Burn Notice star Jeffrey Donovan and Patricia Callamber, formerly of TV's Sisters. Opens November 14th at the Royal George Theater. For tickets to Don't Dress for Dinner, go online at don'tdressfordinner.com.
For more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hi, this is Sandra Bernhard, and you're listening to me on Windy City Queer Cast. Cast your net wide, and who knows what you'll come up with.
He was a famous trumpet man from our Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his craft. But then his number came up, and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowin' reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. They made him blow a bugle for his Uncle Sam. They really brought him down because he could not jam. The captain seemed to understand, because the next year the cap went out and drafted the band. And now the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. A root, a toot, a tootly attitude. He blows an eight to the bar. In boogie rhythm, he can't blow a note unless the bass and guitar is playing with him.
Since 1993, over 12,500 service members have been discharged under the Armed Forces' Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. It is the only law in the U.S. that mandates firing someone just because they are gay. Army veteran Sergeant Darren Manzella is one of those who have felt the effects of this ban. He has served two tours of duties in the Middle East in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom. He is a decorated healthcare specialist rewarded during the war in Iraq, and he served as an openly gay soldier for the entirety of his second tour of duty rotation to both his colleagues and his commander. Manzella told his story about serving openly to CBS News 60 Minutes, and I'm assuming he probably knew that things might change after that. But it's really great that we have the opportunity to have him here as we're heading to Veterans Day. And with the election, Don't Ask, Don't Tell has been quite a topic of conversation. So I'm thrilled to have him with me on the show. Hey, Darren, how are you?
I'm good, Amy. How are you?
I'm good. Now, where are you calling me from?
I'm calling you from Washington, D.C.
Our nation's capital. It's a very exciting time there, I would imagine, right now.
Oh, it is. Everything's up in arms, so. Highly anticipated.
So tell me, why did you want to go into the military? I think that's a calling for many, many people. Some, it's an opportunity to go to college. What was your reasoning behind joining the military?
Well, I did, as many other people in this country do. There's a few reasons for it. I had actually gone to college right out of high school, and I graduated, and I began working as a civilian. And I just knew there's another path that I needed to take. I wasn't quite sure what that was. You know, I was early 20s. And then 9/11 happened in 2001. And that kind of opened not only my eyes, but the eyes of this nation, and what more can we do to help protect ourselves and the ones that we love. So shortly after that, I enlisted in 2002, So that was a major factor. Another major factor was that I had just graduated college, and through the military, they were going to pay off my college loans. So that was a bonus for me. And another factor, there were actually three for me, is that, you know, there was a sense of adventure there. I could embark on something that a little mysterious. I didn't exactly know what, but I knew that I could go into the field that I wanted, which was a medical field, and I would learn amazing things, meet incredible people. And once I weighed all those options at the benefits of joining the military, it really was an easy choice to enlist.
Now, did you have other military family members?
My father was drafted, actually, and he was in the medical corps, actually same specialty that I was in as a medical specialist, but he wasn't in, I believe he was in for about 3 years.
Yeah.
And I have two brothers. They did not, they were not in the military.
So did the military train you medically?
Oh, they did. Military is very thorough. After basic training, I went to San Antonio, Texas, where I received my EMT certification. And after that, I went right into my military training, which is combat medicine, evacuation and trauma, triage.
What were your first thoughts when you landed in Iraq? Was it what you expected? Was the situation something you could have never guessed?
That's exactly how I would explain it. The first time I went to Iraq, it was 2004. And I did not know what to expect. And, you know, even after being there 6 months, I still don't think I knew what to expect. Every day was another challenge. Every day was, you know, the hostility, the environment there. You know, seeing, you know, friends of yours that are killed in battles, something that I would never have guessed that I would have to witness. And I hate that people have to witness that.
Yeah. So that's the military track kind of foundation. What is the gay track? When did you know you were gay? And when did you come to terms with it, become comfortable with it, start telling people in your life that you were gay?
Okay. You know, each of those questions, I think, has a different answer.
Yeah.
When did I know I was gay? In retrospect, as I think a lot of people who realize that they, you know, they are gay, in retrospect, you can kind of look back and think, okay, maybe I knew a long time ago. When did I realize it for myself and admit it to myself? It was after college. You know, when I enlisted in the military, you know, there's the forms, don't ask, don't tell forms that you sign. And I honestly never thought that would apply to me.
Uh-huh.
It was just another piece of paper in front of me. I thought, you know, I really didn't give it a second thought, which is ironic because that is what dictated the end of my military career.
Right.
But I think when I really came to terms of who I was, that I was, you know, a gay man, and I started telling my very close friends, when I told my family, was after my first tour in Iraq. Excuse me. I came back, and I saw the hostility over there. I saw, you know, how quickly, you know, someone's life could end, and I thought, what if that were me? You know, what if that was me that didn't come back, and my family, my friends, my loved ones, they didn't know this about me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of the turning point where, and it wasn't overnight. It wasn't as if I came back, you know, I stepped foot back in Texas soil and I was like, I'm gay. And that's not how it worked. It was, you know, a gradual evolution of, okay, this is who I am. I'm proud of who I am. And I think it's time to let people know, you know, my true self. And that's when I started telling some of my very close friends, my parents, and my other friends. So
were you conflicted when then you had to go back to your second tour? That obviously now you are going to have something you would have to hide, or did you feel you had to hide it?
Now, in between tours, it gets a little interesting. I'll walk you through a little bit. I never thought, you know, I thought this is who I am. Okay, I'm gay. I'm comfortable with that now. I'm confident of who I am. But at the same time, I was very confident of my work performance, and I could keep it separate. I could keep my personal life separate from my professional life, and I had no issue with that. I believe I was very good at my job. I was promoted quickly. I reenlisted while I was in Iraq the first time. I was promoted while I was in Iraq, and then upon return, I was promoted up to division headquarters to work for the general staff. So I was on a very, very career-driven path in the military. And what happened was, you know, as I mentioned, I was able to keep my personal and my professional life separate. But there came a point where I was receiving some emails on my Army, my military account, saying that I was being watched. There was an investigation, you know, looking into me being gay, that the Army was really cracking down and, you know, they're going to deploy me. This is all from a source. I didn't know who this person was. And they said, well, they're going to deploy you, they're going to demote you, then they're going to kick you out of the military. So all of a sudden this paranoia and this fear rushes in, and it's horrible that I know I mean, at the time I felt like I was alone. I was the only one. And, you know, now I know more and more. This is what people go through under this don't ask, don't tell law. So eventually it came to a point where I wasn't getting sleep. I was paranoid at work. I was on edge constantly because I didn't know. I really didn't know what the actions were against someone that violates don't ask, don't tell. Well, really, I wasn't telling anybody, but I was being told that, you know, they're investigating you. So the day came where I went to my supervisor and I said, sir, I don't really understand what's going on. I don't know what to do. And I told him the truth. I said, I have these emails, I have these phone calls, and it's in violation of don't ask, don't tell, but I don't know where else to go. And that's kind of where the path started there, where I started becoming open to my colleagues at work.
So what was his response?
His response, he made me feel better. He said, you know, go home, try not to worry about it, which is, you know, much easier said than done.
Right.
He said, I'll see you tomorrow. I just come in tomorrow for exercise in the morning. So I said, okay. And when I went back to work the next day, he had reported me to the legal department, which under this law he is required to do.
Right.
I was my first smudging the lines of professional and personal. I was actually going for some advice or some guidance, but at the same time, it's hard to do that with your supervisor. So I was called in to see my battalion commander, and he had to read me my rights as under investigation. And he said they were going to investigate me and just continue with work, keep doing what I was doing, you know, wanted to make sure I was okay. So about a little less than a month later, I was called back in, and he said that, this is my battalion commander, that the investigation had been closed. They had found no proof of homosexuality. And he opened the door and kind of nudged me back to work. I said, okay. The confusion was that during this investigation, I was, you know, asked questions, and I said I prefer not to answer any questions before I speak with some legal advice or some legal counsel. And I ended up filling out a questionnaire, so I didn't have to do this interview in person. Uh-huh. And I was very honest with it. He said, did you say this to your supervisor? Did you tell your supervisor you were gay? Yes, I did. Why did you do this? And I explained the emails and the phone calls. This is why. And then I went into some depth of why I did this and what I was, you know, trying to find some guidance. But from my words, and they were just, the honesty was just kind of coming out, and it was almost a relief for that it was finally out there.
Mm-hmm.
But the confusing part was that they found no, you know, proof of homosexuality. I'm like, okay. I spoke to my legal counsel that's out here in Washington, D.C. They had been helping me since the very first email. And they said, well, you were honest with them. They know that you're gay. You're self-proclaimed. So if you feel comfortable serving openly, serve openly.
Hmm.
So I said, okay, that's something, you know, same thing. It's not something that, you know, I wasn't running through broadcasting. I'm a gay sergeant in the United States military. It was just, okay, if this can be an issue, it can no longer be an issue because I've been honest, I've been straightforward with it. So they know this came from my mouth that, yes, this is, you know, my true self now. And they decided to keep me. So that relief was a huge relief again. I thought, you know, this is an incredible step towards getting rid of don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah.
Because they're telling me I'm able, you know, qualified, proven that I can serve. So why would they want to lose me? And I thought this is a great step for, you know, thousands of other gay and lesbian troops in the military.
Yeah. What did what was their response when you came back to your second tour and you were living a little more openly, or a lot more openly, since you were paranoid and fearful before?
That's true. There was a little bit of time. There was some time before we deployed back, but I was open to my colleagues, and it was very, they were very supportive and accepting. I was invited. All of a sudden, people were going out to dinner with their friends or husbands and wives and girlfriends, and they would invite me and my boyfriend to go. I thought, this is incredible. Why was I so fearful of this? Why is the military so fearful of this? So it was kind of, they saw that there was more to me, and I was guarded and protected before, and it just, you know, kind of evaporated, and I was, you know, a comrade and a friend to these people.
Do you think it was because there was such a need for your specialty that they overlooked this? I mean, obviously, you're a fantastic soldier, but other fantastic soldiers have been immediately discharged, and if we're talking about, this is around 2004?
The first deployment was 2004. The second deployment was 2006.
2006. So this is kind of pre-surge. Mm-hmm. And do you think that that had some impact? I mean, did any of your colleagues say, wow, I'm thrilled that they're not following the letter of the law, so to speak?
I think many were relieved that I was still there.
Yeah.
Even because I didn't know, as I mentioned earlier, I didn't know the course of action that command has to take. So I think that was a big part of the paranoia. So, of course, if I didn't know, many of my coworkers didn't know that,
right,
because it really didn't apply to them.
Right.
So the fact that they saw that I was being retained, regardless of being gay, and I think they saw it as it would have been a loss to the division if I were removed. And in my opinion, I would hope that my command saw it as that reason, but it's also a reason to say, okay, you know, this person is great at what he does, like thousands of other gay and lesbian troops in the military. You know, he wants to be here. He's willing to go back to fight again. Why are we going to get rid of this person? And I hope that's the consensus that's building across the command and the military.
Is exactly that. So what about this notion? I mean, obviously the big argument is that being gay and serving openly gay would affect unit cohesion. This is a phrase we hear, you know, when the argument's brought up, well, you know, for a while, African-Americans weren't allowed to serve, or women, there's still sexism in the military. Did you debunk this myth of unit cohesion when you were serving openly, or did you see any sign or symptom that that would cause a unit to break down?
I found no sign of detriment to a unit because of someone serving openly. And I'm glad you brought up the points. I used to think and say, you know, the military used to be segregated. Blacks and whites, they couldn't serve together. The military used to not allow women to serve. But, you know, I had women serving right alongside me. I had, you know, people of every race and every religious faction, a whole diverse group in the military. We were serving side by side. And so the argument is brought up for gay and lesbians in the military, and the only difference is that sexism and racism are not tolerated in the military, but there's no policy to protect someone for being gay in the military. So that is one, and that's one thing that we're working for here in Washington, D.C., is to try and put a non-discrimination clause into the policy. But I'll get back to your question, because I know I tend to drift off.
No, it's good.
Back to unit cohesion. I started to see that the myth of being harmful to unit cohesion when I came out to my colleagues while we were still in Fort Hood, Texas. I was much more open with them. You know, we were seeing each other in groups outside in a social affection. Just, it wasn't always at work, and we were just very, I felt much more accepted and included, and it was kind of a shattered the myth that I would be, you know, pushed away and, you know, isolated. Now, on the deployment, my second deployment, I was open to a lot of people. Even if I wasn't open to them personally, they knew. A lot of people knew. I was in a high-profile job, so a lot of people knew. And I didn't get any negative attitudes, pretty much. And this is, I think, what should be true. I mean, you should be judged on your performance, on your work ethic, on how you get along with others. And I don't think other factors should weigh on your career.
Well, it's interesting because it actually sounds like there became more cohesion, more cohesion when you came out, because I would think before you might seem like you had a secret. I mean, that's one of the things we know as GLBT people, is that when we're closeted and we're hiding, we're not authentic, and people can read that.
That's exactly true. Because you don't have that secrecy, that's not there. Because when you're forced to be silent under don't ask, don't tell, I mean, there's so much that you cannot relay about yourself. And it's mm-hmm. horrible when you have to sit there and the person next to you has a picture of their wife or their husband or boyfriend, girlfriend, and you don't have any pictures because you're not, you know, that's a violation to have a picture of someone that you love.
Yeah.
Or you have to lie about who that person is. You have to be careful if you get an email, if you want to be on the phone, even if you're your personal cell phone, you have to be very, very cautious of what you say or even the actions you take, even if it's just sending an email. It's like hardening of like your heart. It just makes you very, very skeptical about being who you are. And I think that's horrible. And I think I was lucky in that I had so much acceptance and so much support. And I really do think it's a step in the way that our generation is. I mean, I think our generation as a whole is very accepting, and they don't see being gay or lesbian as something that could topple the military, because it's still standing. I served the whole deployment. I served almost 15 months on my last deployment, openly gay, and the military is still there.
So why talk to 60 Minutes? Why and how did that happen?
That happened. I was on deployment, and I had received a call from my legal team. I work at this time right now. I work for Service Members Legal Defense Network. They offer free legal services to people in the military affected by Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And prior to working here, I was a client for 2 years, as I mentioned earlier, since I received the first email. So I had been in contact with them. They were very adamant about staying in touch with me, making sure, you know, there's no discrimination, no harassment. And also they would stay in touch with me if some media opportunities would come up. And I did an interview with The Advocate magazine that was published in, I believe it was July of 2007. And shortly after that, the communications director from SLDN called me. He said, well, I had a call from CBS. They saw The Advocate article, and they would love to do a segment on 60 Minutes about Don't Ask, Don't Tell and how it affects people in the military. And I said, okay, well, let me get the lawyers back on the line. So my lawyers, Aaron and Kathy, who were incredible, by the way, they said, okay, now every time you speak, you know, they could come after you again for violating Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I said, okay. And this was not an easy decision to decide to do 60 Minutes. I knew it was a national program.
And mainstream program, too, at that.
Yeah, yes. So it took me a couple weeks to think about it. And I said, tell me the benefits. I wasn't really concerned about, because I was open already, I wasn't concerned about that as much as what are the benefits, what good can this do? And they said, that's when they started filling me with the facts. Like, we have about 65,000 gay men and lesbian women in the military that are silenced under this. And they said, you have this opportunity to speak and put a voice to these people that are silenced by Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's what brought it home for me. I thought, you know, I had this incredible opportunity. Just all I have to do is sit down with Leslie Stahl and tell my story. Just tell about the last few months of my life, and it could help thousands and thousands of these men and women that I serve with in the military.
So how long after doing the interview, or how long after it aired, did you hear from the Army?
Well, it aired on December 16th, 2007. I was still in Kuwait. I was coming home days after. I was back in Texas just a few days after it aired. Really nothing was said. I went home to New York to see my family for the holidays. I returned to Texas back to work in late January. Still nothing really had been said. People had seen it, and they recognized, like some of my friends had recognized it. But this time Google had me all over the place.
Right.
But as for my command, really nothing had been said, and I thought, okay, well, you know, here we go. This is another great step. You know, they want to retain me, no matter, you know, how public this became. You know, they want to retain me. They're taking their step in the right direction and doing the right thing by allowing me to stay and serve my country that I'm willing to do. And I'm I was hoping and wishing at the same time, this is true as commands across the country. And, you know, even in our overseas bases, they're saying, okay, we need these people. They want to be here. They're incredible men and women. Let's keep them.
Yeah.
So this was January. Shortly after that, I received orders to go to a hospital position in Fort Drum, New York. And I received those orders, and I was supposed to go in April. Now, in March, I was called in to see my commander, and he told me that they were recommending discharge, and attached to the discharge recommendation was a transcript from 60 Minutes. So they were actually using the 60 Minutes transcript to discharge me.
Yeah.
And that was in March, and my discharge date was June 10th of this year. So,
I mean, obviously, I'm sure that's full of mixed emotions for you, but it sounds like your eyes were wide open as you went in. And
I understood. I was very well informed. My lawyers kept me very informed of what could happen, the possibilities, and of course, we didn't know for sure. We didn't know. They could say we don't want to discharge you, and that would have been their decision. And now, when it came to the publicity from 60 Minutes, I knew it was a greater possibility. But
yeah.
I really thought that the opportunity I have was too great to pass up in order to speak for these people that are forced to stay quiet.
It's just amazing, right? Because when our troops are so extended, mm-hmm. and to fire someone who is extremely experienced and has been highly trained, there's a lot of money that goes into, you know, each person, each soldier, especially as they advance in their careers. And then, you know, they kick you out. They have to bring somebody in lesser qualified or train someone. And then they're also reaching out to people who are, you know, they're going into prisons and all other kinds of situations to try to get people to fill the need. I mean, there's such a need. Do you think that with what is going on with the need still for people on the ground and in Iraq, in Afghanistan, you know, on our shores, I mean, all the other places that we have troops, and with what's going on economically, do you feel, and heading into obviously a new election, do you feel we're getting closer to this being repealed just because the variables are all lining up?
I think we're getting much closer to repeal. There's still, you know, arguments for both sides, and you know, this is my personal opinion. I think we're getting close. Now, I would like to say I would hate to think that they would say we're going to keep you. We don't want to keep you, but we need you. And I think that'd be a huge insult.
Mm-hmm.
And I would hate to think that that's the frame of mind that commanders use. And I would hope that they see, you know, you're qualified, you're proven. You're a part of this team that we have fighting, you know, day in, day out together. That's why we're going to keep you. That's why we're going to fight to get rid of this
right.
law, this bad law.
Yeah.
That discriminates against people.
Yeah.
Now, as for the other questions you posed with, it's expensive. I mean, it's not only expensive financially, but yeah, I mean, they're offering $150,000 bonuses to either sign people or re-sign people to stay in. So they're paying these per person. It's just outrageous.
Yeah.
When I'm there, I'm willing, but I'm out. But we're going to pay this guy $150,000. We have to bring him in. We have to train him. He has to get combat experience. However, you know, the last 6 years that I had, he's going to have to build up.
Yeah.
It's financially expensive. It's difficult because you lose that unit cohesion that, you know, is so important, but that myth that it's detrimental. You actually are losing unit cohesion because you're kicking this key factor of a team out.
Right.
And you have to replace it with someone new and that trust. These people that I was in Iraq with the first time for 12 months, we were doing, you know, 12-hour patrols every day in the streets of Baghdad. We were shot at. We had bombs going off around us. I mean, they became my brothers, you know, and I was their brother.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's very difficult to replace. It's hard to pull
sure.
someone and say, hey, this is, you know, Specialist Jones. He's going to be the new Sergeant Manzella. And that's hard to do. And
yeah.
not just me. It's for anybody.
Yeah.
Well,
it's an amazing story, and that you have given voice to it and continue to. And I know now you're you know, putting your actions where your mouth is continually with the work that you're doing with the Service Members Legal Defense Network. They're a great organization, and if people need to reach out to SLDN, you can just go to sldn.org. But there's this big event happening in Chicago, and there are going to be a number of people that are going to be speaking, and then a concert all leading up to just showing support for the repeal of this ban. And if you're listening to this podcast in another city, I'm sure there will be other GLBT efforts in your area. So you probably should just go to the SLDN website and see if you can find out what's going on in your neck of the woods. But the event to show support in the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell is Saturday, November 8th. There's going to be a gathering at 6 o'clock with the concert at 7. It's at Northside College Prep High School in the third floor atrium at 5501 North Kedzie. And if you want more information, there's a great site at chicagosldn.com. Who all will be joining you that day?
Well, Eric Alpha will be there. He'll be emceeing the concert. And then we'll have Mary Jean Hall. She is our development director that I work with out here at SLDN. She'll be out there with me. We also are going to have some more veterans and some other people that have been discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And also one of our board members on SLDN, Jean Albright, who is a former Air Force non-commissioned officer, will be there.
Yeah, it's going to be an amazing day. And, you know, it's so funny that I hear so many GLBT people say, well, why would you want to serve, or why would you want to be somewhere that doesn't want you? And, you know, if we said that, I mean, through the ages, no one has wanted us anywhere. So we would be, you know, invisible. We would be holed up in little rooms, not engaged in the world. And it's definitely a core issue for our community, Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And, you know, prayers and actions are hopefully that this will change under the new administration. But Darren, I really appreciate you being with us. And I'm sure Veterans Day will be a time of remembrance for you, and also a time of just being a good soldier and continuing to forge ahead to make changes against this ban.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Darren Manzella, Army Veteran Sergeant Darren Manzella. If you'd like more, or you or someone that you care about is dealing with some of these issues with being gay or lesbian in the military, check out sldn.org, and we'll have that linked in our notes. Thanks a lot, Darren.
Thank you, Amy.
Attention, all American queers. See all that you can see at Reeling 2008. The 27th Chicago Lesbian and Gay International Film Festival. Enjoy 11 days of fantastic films, November 6th through November 16th. Reeling's opening night film is Breakfast with Scott, with a gala immediately following. Closing night, join Project Runway winner Jay McCarroll for his film 11 Minutes and at the after party. Other visiting celebrities include Ally Sheedy and the L Word's Elizabeth Keener. Visit www.reelingfilmfestival.org for tickets and more.
So we have had a packed day of voting and also a fun-filled night with Sandra Bernhardt at Steppenwolf. If you missed it, you missed it, because she was in and out of town just today, just tonight. Did you enjoy her?
I loved her.
You've seen her a lot live.
Yeah, I've seen her a lot live. And She seemed a little rickety in places.
Yeah.
She was walking the great walk around that stage. I didn't know where she was going. I've never seen her do that before. She kept swatting that stick everywhere.
Yeah.
Some of it was really, really on, and some of it just didn't seem well oiled.
Yeah.
And not that, you know, she can't try stuff out. She clearly was looking at her papers a lot and didn't know lyrics to things she was singing, so.
Well, this is definitely a very unique show that she just created for Halloween for Chicago. She's been doing Without You, I'm Nothing, as she said on our show last week. She's been doing that for a while now, and hopefully she'll come back through with her 20th anniversary. Crazy.
It is 20 crazy.
Years. 20 freaking years. And
love
but
that.
Hopefully, of course, she talked a lot about politics as well, and so this has kind of been a... I guess it feels like all of the queer casts of late have been political. And as she said, she can't wait. We are less than a week away from this whole thing being decided. So, you know, we're in the home stretch, and it's very, very exciting. And hopefully, even with having Darren on today as our guest, you hear the imminence of change coming, that people want change, and it seems like the country is moving toward change. So
it It's exciting.
It is exciting. We were discussing, and we'll just mention this briefly, and then maybe Alex and I will talk about it next week. But we were mentioning that we had listened to Bill Maher talk about the fact that, you know, how are we going to joke about, you know, Obama as a president? First of all, he doesn't have a lot of things to be able to pick at. I mean, he's good looking, he's thin, he's well educated, and also is America and its comedians going to be touchy about the fact that he's a black man? And I teased at the beginning saying, you know, we're lesbians voting for the black man. But I mean, it's going to have to be an aspect of the comedy. Is what makes him unique, don't you think?
I mean,
people probably joked around Kennedy about being a baby or being young because he was the youngest president. He was also Catholic. I don't know that people joked about his Catholicism.
Yeah,
probably
I don't
some
know
people
that
did.
You can joke about some. I just don't know. I have. It just makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up.
Yeah.
Thinking
is
about
it because
four
it's race?
Years. I think it is.
Because, I mean, we obviously made fun of Clinton for being Southern, being from Arkansas. So is that offensive?
I'm sure it is to some people.
Yeah, I'm Southern.
I mean, people are going to pick. I mean, they're going to pick on every president. They're going to find something, and hopefully yeah. It's not just, you know, the cliches of all the racist jokes that we hear time and time again that still have not gone under the carpet, because I just think it's pretty dangerous territory to get into. It doesn't have the stigma that Southerners have or that white trash has. It just doesn't.
Right.
It doesn't have the same historical,
obviously we've thrown
horrors attached to it, and
people have thrown Palin under the bus, obviously, because she's an easy target. But, you know, I mean, political satire and satire of our presidents is a huge thing. I mean, you know, I think back of how far this has gone from watching the Saturday Night Live sketch where it had Barack Obama, you know, up in the middle of the night. You know, it's 3 a.m.
Hillary?
Hillary? And, you know, he had all these expletives, and he was cursing, and she was like, Barack, are you smoking? When Amy Poehler was playing Hillary Clinton, who obviously didn't make it in the White House in the sketch. This was before it was actually decided. But, you know, I mean, I think they found their own ways to poke fun at him that, I guess, didn't have anything to do with race. It kind of had to do with inexperience, perhaps, because that's what she was touting. But it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. It seems like it's the polls are really getting wider and wider.
Yeah,
so.
It does. And it was good to see. Sanders always fantastic, even if she's trying stuff off. So it was good that she talked a lot about, you know, a lot of things. And certainly the election is what's on everyone's mind. I don't know. It's just that thing that Bill Maher said about the heart-shaped, can he have a heart-shaped bed in the White House and, you know,
say,
bring world leaders in and say, this is where I make my babies at. I mean, that to me, it's just, I understand the humorous aspect of it, but if we get too, I don't know, it's a little too close,
yeah.
I think.
Well, it'll be interesting. It will be interesting, and time will tell. We will see. We will see where it all goes down. But listen to the next podcast, because that will be our last pre-election podcast.
Wow.
I know. How exciting is that?
It's going to be exciting.
And
we voted today.
Unless this is the pre-election podcast. No, I think we have one more. So, I am off to my nanny's 100th birthday on Halloween.
Crazy.
I want to say happy Halloween to
everyone.
Oh,
you should check and see if she's going to be on that.
Everybody watch the Today Show. Nanny Jackson. Alice Jackson.
Is she going to
be on it? Well, we submitted her, so we'll see. And we hope you have a really great day. And Darren Manzella, what an inspiration and quite a hunk, as you will see. So so go to the show notes and check him out in his fatigues. Is that what you call them?
His fatigues.
Gear. He's hot in his, they're not called scrubs.
Fatigues.
His fatigues, yeah. He's a cutie. And what a great story. What a great story of being out and proud and continuing to try to serve the men and women in the military and get Don't Ask, Don't Tell repealed. It's really, really a great story. Ooh, one more show, and then everybody votes. It's exciting.
It is exciting.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming.
Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our QueerCast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, Amy Wooten, news editor, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueerCast.com and iTunes. The next QueerCast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City QueerCast, queer and now.